Mini episode 1836 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1836. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, FDH Hoops Analyst Ben Chu. We are here today to talk about and preview the 2025 NBA Finals. And we come into this with a decade worth of track record of doing the show together here and making picks before the finals. Over the last 10 years, I am 7-3, which many people might say is rather noteworthy. I am not too modest to say so myself, but that does, of course, pale in comparison to the record established by my man, Ben Chu, who has been nothing short of en fuego throughout the 10 years. He is 10-0 in our 10 years of picking the NBA Finals together on the show, going for 11. And one would say, and looking at this year's matchup, that going 11-0 might not be the hardest thing in the world, were it not for the matter of perhaps a bit of personal pique that might stand in the way here. But Ben, great to have you on as always, and looking forward to breaking down the finals. We've been 10-0 on great finals preview shows the last couple of years, and you've been 10-0 on your picks.
Right. It's going to be a really interesting series because it, in all honesty, Rick, if you just look at the raw data numbers, it's a David versus Goliath matchup. So it's going to be very interesting. But again, if this was one of those scenarios where David could pull out a win, it might be this year or so.
It is possible. No question about it. And what we have, I'm going to bring up here, uno momento, is the FDH NBA end of regular season breakdown for 2024-2025. And it is available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And what we are looking at here, as I bring this up, is specifically as it relates to the matchup between Oklahoma City and Indiana in the finals. You will note here, Oklahoma City finished second in our overall matrix of statistics for the season. Indiana was sixth. My Cleveland Cavaliers were first. I am still bemoaning the fact that the three big superstars on the Cavs had three good legs between them at the end of the NBA Eastern Conference semifinals, but we are where we are. And for Oklahoma City and Indiana, when you talk about David and Goliath, it's because of this. It's because Indiana does not have an edge in a single category here. They are close in a few, but they don't have the edge in a single category. In our final NBA power rankings for the regular season, Oklahoma City was first, Indiana was 12th, to which I can only put a whoops on that one. But in SRS, Oklahoma City first, Indiana 14th. In offensive rating, Oklahoma City third, Indiana 7th. Defensive rating, Oklahoma City, of course, first, Indiana 14th. EFG, Oklahoma City, actually, I stand corrected from before. Here is one where Indiana has a slight edge. EFG and Indiana 4th, Oklahoma City 6th, and TS percentage as well. Oklahoma City is 6th to Indiana being 5th, but an assist to turnover margin, that ratio, I should say. Oklahoma City 1st, Indiana 2nd in 3-point percentage. Oklahoma City 5th, Indiana 8th, and in margin of victory, Oklahoma City first and Indiana 12th. For the 3-point percentage, and we'll talk about the overall thing as well here, that one was kind of somewhat surprising to me because when you and I talk about Oklahoma City and any perceived kind of downside to all of the dominance that they bring, you have pointed out on a couple of different occasions, on air and off air, the lack of quality scoring depth at the top. as it were. You know, when you get beyond Gilgeous Alexander, did 2, 3, 4, 5 in there, and you're not wrong about that, but fifth overall in 3-point percentage. So they have a depth in that that is pretty strong.
Right, and the big thing, obviously, is their bench of Kaysen Wallace and Isaiah Joe and Aaron Wiggins, excuse me, I almost said Andrew there. But they, you know, they got some great scoring. You know, they have good outside shooting. Again, we all know they're defensively one of the best teams, one of the best teams at creating turnovers. And during like the during this playoff run, like I believe, unless I'm mistaken, they've had like a positive net rating of over 4 at this point. So it's not really surprising. This is, they were the best team all year, and if they go on and win the finals, have a claim to be one of the top 5 teams in NBA history just based off of their total record. And they would become, I believe, the 4th team in NBA history to win over 84 games, including regular season and playoffs. So it's going to be a very interesting stylistic narrative, Rick, because we've also, because of the 2 games they played this season, Oklahoma City won both by pretty sizable margins. But again, there were a lot of things that at the time were different. They were, both those games were played earlier in the regular season, where Indiana was struggling in that timeline. Like, they did not get off to a great start. And also another big one that we have to also note is Chet Holmgren was injured for both of those games. So it's going to be very interesting to see his matchups on the offense and defense, or whether they're going to put him more on Miles Turner or Pascal Siakam at this time.
That is going to be a very interesting thing. Yeah, the matchups up and down the line, the strategy that's going to come in play with the two very gifted coaches is going to be worth paying a lot of attention to. Before we move on to anything else here, anything, any other notes from the statistical index that kind of jump out at you as far as where, particularly maybe areas where Oklahoma City has a significant edge?
I mean, my big thing, too, is just as looking at the assist-to-turnover ratio is one of them. I think what happens, and I mean, we've discussed this during the regular season, like Oklahoma City was the best in points off of turnovers. And again, Indiana, the one thing that you can say about their offense that they do not turn the ball over that much, but at least in the matchups that we saw this season, Haliburton didn't exactly have his best game. And again, too, they were dealing with some injuries as well. So it's tough to really, and again, too, Rick, how do I put this properly? The Pacers, for most of this data points, kind of their poor start to the season kind of impacts these data points on some level. So all this really proves to me at this point is that Oklahoma City is the most, had the most balanced regular season, and outside of maybe Cleveland at this period of time.
I think so. I think that's a fair assessment.
Balanced, but most consistent season.
Well, the other thing is, too, when you look at the playoffs, when you look at particularly Indiana's insanely hot shooting that they've had going here, and you and I have talked off air about this, that in both major sports here, the NBA and the NHL heading into the finals this year, that it has seemed a lot of times as though the regular season hasn't necessarily been as important of an indicator. And one of the notions is, and when I do the breakdown very shortly from now of the Stanley Cup final with Russ Cohen, this is certainly going to come up. The fact that Florida was, I think, something like 28th in shot percentage during the season. So just an incredible fluke right there. I'm not saying that the reverse is true with Indiana, but the way that they have just been red hot on their shooting in the playoffs in a way that doesn't necessarily indicate how they played in the regular season. They were not a bad shooting team in the regular season, but they weren't as scorching as they've been now. So it's one of those things where you and I are always talking about when the regressions are due to kick in and everything like that. And this is one of these things where the one thing we know for sure is Indiana has to stay hot with the shooting, regardless of the defensive pressure from Oklahoma City, which is going to come. They're going to face a blanket like they haven't faced at any point in time during the playoffs. Oklahoma City does have a tendency to leave the corners open. Indiana must hit every shot from there. I mean, they have to stay insanely hot in order to stay in this series. I think we would both agree on that.
And one thing we know, too, like during the regular season, Oklahoma City was in the top 3 of giving up 3-point attempts. So,
yeah.
One of the benefits of this Indiana team is they do have a very deep roster of guys who can make threes. So, and again, ultimately, I feel like the prior data points we saw, Rick, at least for Indiana, are a little skewed because they didn't play well to start the regular season. Haliburton missed a couple of games, and they really didn't catch their stride until the second half post All-Star break. And I feel so. I kind of feel like there's a gap based off of that data point, but I also more feel like those data points are more pertaining towards the tail end of the regular season, the overall season, more than what Indiana is playing right now. And I mean, it's going to be very. I'm going to state this very honestly for Indiana: is Haliburton has to play well. It's really not that complicated in the two matchups. This year, he was under 22 total points. In both matchups, he scored less than 25 points. So,
yeah.
I mean, they really need him to do it. But the one thing we have to give Indiana credit for is in every single playoff matchup they faced, they've won on the road. And we saw OKC had a mental lapse against Denver. So, if Indiana has the potential to get and make this series a competitive one, is that if they can steal one of those first two games at home, in OKC, they have a legitimate chance to win this series.
That's what they're going to have to do. I think they're going to be very, very hard pressed.
In my opinion, the series is over.
I would agree because it's the notion of a lot of smart marks will have a tendency to say, well, all they have to do is defend their own court in games three and four. Yeah, but you're looking at having to win four out of five games at that point. I don't think there's any team on the planet.
Consistency just in the playoffs alone. To get big wins on the road in the playoffs has been their hallmark. So the only way that Indiana can take control of the series is to win one of the first two games and then sort of put OKC on the heels. Because again, I do think the one major difference at this point that Indiana has over OKC is that Rick Carlisle is arguably one of the top five coaches in the NBA right now. This is not disrespecting Mark Diagno, who is one of the young up-and-coming rising head coaches in the NBA. Sure. We have to just note that Carlisle's been there before. They've won a title. He's won a title with Dallas. So he's been in these scenarios before. And the one thing that, again, I stress this enough, and this is not a knock on OKC, but this is more just, they're still a very young team. This is their really first deep playoff run. And I could totally see a scenario where if Indiana shocks them very similar to how they shocked Cleveland or how they shocked the Knicks, that Indiana could make this a competitive series because as long as they can win two out of three in Indiana, they have a legitimate shot to win.
Yes, I would agree with that. And Carlisle showing yet again just how elite he is right now. And Dagano has a chance to etch his name way up there if they can finish this here with the kind of season that they've had. And this is one of these things where you look at it and you say that, Indiana might perhaps have a chance, a solid chance in this series. And you hate to talk about any of this stuff, but if Oklahoma City suffers a significant injury, but it's one of those things where I kind of have a hard time seeing it be short of, anybody short of SGA. And I'm not really sure that it matters because you look at, depending on who you consider to be the second most important player on the Thunder, whether it be Chet Holmgren or Jalen Williams, and I would have thought going into the season probably Chet Holmgren because of the upside. But, I mean, they played pretty doggone well in his absence. And again, certainly not a Ewing theory kind of a deal. They're not a better team without Chet Holmgren. That's ridiculous. But it just goes to show you their ability to sort of compensate and just keep regenerating with the bench guys and keep running them out there. And with all of the defensive effort that you get from them, Lou Dort is basically the center of it all as far as, no pun intended, but as far as the doesn't play center, of course, but as far as the defensive capabilities of this team, Alex Caruso figures in significantly, the one guy in the team that does have a ring, and we'll have to see if that, experience kind of comes into play later in the series here. So it's one of those things where, as long as SGA stays in one piece, you kind of have a hard time seeing, Indiana be like, oh, well, they're banged up. We have a really good chance now.
Yeah, I mean, my thing, too, is like an injury to Jalen Williams would be impactful. But even then, I'm like, I don't think that would end OKC's run. Like, I think SGA would be the one. But I would even make the argument, too, is that I do think Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren would keep them in a series. I don't think it's a done deal that SGA even gets injured and they're done.
Yeah.
Boy, imagine that. Because of their depth and their thing. And again, you have to give credit to Sam Presti and the and just their entire sort of ecosystem that they've been able to create on the fly after making one Paul George trade. And just essentially setting themselves up for the next 6 to 8 seasons. And again, it's not really, this isn't shocking. Presti was, you know, at San Antonio, so he learned under RC Buford. So they've essentially, again, I'm just saying we should not be shocked. This is essentially what happened in San Antonio all those years in the mid-2000s, of how they were able to build a roster from within with a premier player. In this case, in that case, it was Tim Duncan and Tony Parker. In this case, now it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren. So it's really not surprising. We both liked this OKC team coming up in the last couple of years. I think last year that loss to Dallas was a little shocking to them. And we've seen this before with young playoff teams. They need that sort of like one playoff series to sort of get them prepared and wake them up for the trials and tribulations of just how the NBA playoffs are. So, again, this has just been it's just a weird scenario because we've discussed this a lot too, Rick, with the NBA. It's very star-driven, and SGA is still a very young star at this moment. And, again, like, I know we're probably going to at some point talk about the real big question of how the ratings for the finals this year are going to be. But, again, like, most people's knowledge of SGA right now are just honest. I would say most people who are not big basketball fans are just his appearances in those AT&T commercials for the last 2 years. Like, that's really, I don't think, like, this is one of those scenarios very similar to when Jokic and Giannis won their first finals. Mm-hmm. That if he gets it, that will propel him to a certain level of stardom that will rise both Oklahoma City and his Q score up.
It will. It will. I feel like in the case of Giannis, he was somewhat kind of preceded by his reputation kind of coming in. I don't think it was the case with Jokic, even though Jokic was clearly the best player in the league for a year or two minimum prior to winning the title. But playing in Denver had a lot to do with SGA playing in Oklahoma City has a lot to do with. This is something you and I have talked about off air, man. And that's the thing. Like, I do remember the ubiquitous commercial last year, the singing commercial with Alexander and Holmgren, where, and I just remember, and like, and even my friends that aren't as much into the NBA, like, they were like, I'm sick of that commercial. I've seen it. But like, they probably couldn't tell, my friends that aren't as much into basketball couldn't tell you who those two guys were. They're just the guys that annoyed me from the commercial. So SGA has yet to kind of break out sort of, you know, beyond the hardcore NBA bubble as far as being known. You're right. This is going to precipitate that. And America is going to get to know him very well, very quickly, if they can put this away and if they can complete this in this manner. And in terms of a couple of the other aspects of the series, as you said, market size is one of them. This is one of these things where I got to say, and I shouldn't make my picks on things like this, but one of the reasons I picked the Knicks to win the Eastern Conference Finals was I just figured Indiana wasn't going to have a chance with the whistles. This is not the series at all that the NBA wanted. If this was a year or two down the road and Oklahoma City was sort of established as far as being the power that they are becoming, maybe the NBA could unclench their butt cheeks a little bit and say, okay, maybe it doesn't matter as much who comes out of the East. But Oklahoma City, because again, they're still building that Q rating. And now they're facing Indiana, which, again, in terms of market size, I was reading something that said this is the smallest market size NBA Finals since 1971 with Milwaukee and what was then the Baltimore Bullets, now Washington Wizards. So in looking at that part of it, again, it's going to be interesting to see because on a basketball level, on a pure basketball level, and I guess to a certain extent, this is assuming that Indiana can hang with Oklahoma City. But it's very exciting in terms of the matchups, in terms of a lot of the things that are really at stake here. And you look at it last year where you had a Dallas team coming out of the West that was kind of top heavy. I was kind of fooled at the time in terms of thinking that Luka could carry them all the way on that. I kind of went out on a limb and was wrong. But it's like, on paper, this is one of the more interesting finals of the last couple of years, I would think. We'll have to see how that plays out, because usually the X's and O's are not very instrumental when it comes into, you know, translating into ratings. It's, I know that guy, I know that guy. And there's not a lot of that for the mainstream right now.
And I think also, too, like, this is, again, we are in a world where TV ratings for sports are degrading over time outside of the Super Bowl. That's the only event right now that really is building upon its ratings behemoth
right at
this time. But again, at this too, like, again, we've all surmised that the NBA doesn't like these small matches. But again, I get to, like, we are now existing in a world of, you know, the new CBA parity. So again, this is good for the league's health, but ratings wise, it's not great for them, because I think it's a very regional matchup, and we've seen based off of the ratings in prior finals that regional matchups tend to not do well. Like, if you look at in recent last, since the NBA on NBC has left after doing the finals, and since it's moved to the ABC era, most of the finals that were down in the dumps, let's say if we exclude the Disney World Mickey Mouse finals, three of the lowest finals ratings all encompassed small markets. So I think by default, the ratings, I think, is going to be very dependent on how interesting the first two games are. If it's just OKC blowing out Indiana, this may be the worst rated finals up to the COVID finals at that point. So I don't know. And again, the real question too is that you're going to have the basketball purists that watch. But, and again, this is probably for, like, the Stanley Cup review, it's a very interesting question for Russ Cohen. It's like, I don't know if Florida Edmonton's anything to get excited about either. So it's going to be very interesting, because usually, Rick, like, when we talk about the NBA and the NHL and the finals running in concurrence with each other, usually what we would say, like, one of them is much more interesting than the other one. And this year, it's more just kind of like, the interesting part, I would make the argument, is probably that the Stanley Cup Finals, just for the rematch factor and the potential for Edmonton to break the streak in Canada not winning a Stanley Cup, is much more interesting than the NBA Finals at this time.
Yes, and the thing that I would say about that is, now, it's a rematch with Florida and Edmonton where there's an aspect of this that we didn't see coming a year ago, and it has nothing to do with hockey. Although there is a hockey aspect, you go back to February, the Four Nations face-off, which I was really geeked up about coming in, but it became a bigger thing. I'm generally pessimistic about any great hockey things being latched onto by the mainstream, but current events, U.S. and Canada at loggerheads. So this is an aspect, too, of a year ago, I don't think keeping Canada from taking back the Stanley Cup would have seemed like a big thing in the U.S. of A. Maybe it does this year. Maybe there's that aspect of it. Maybe the nationalism factors in a way that it didn't a year ago, because the world is in a different place a year later. It is a thing where the X's and O's of that series are going to be outstanding. But yeah, I mean, this is a challenge the NBA faced in 2019 when it was Toronto and Golden State, in that, hey, Canadian ratings don't factor in for ABC. It is televised by a completely different network north of the border, as is the case for hockey. So when there's a Canadian team in it, you don't have the rooting interest for two U.S. markets. At the very least, you do have that with the NBA, albeit they are relatively tiny markets on the landscape here. There is another off-court aspect to this that is fascinating, and it gets to the legacy of a no-doubt Hall of Fame player. I don't want to say first ballot necessarily, but a no-doubt Hall of Fame player whose legacy is affected by this series, and he's not in it. It's Paul George. This is the who needs Paul George NBA Finals, because Paul George was the centerpiece of the trade that OKC made. When they sent him out, they got back SGA and a bunch of picks. And then Indiana had also traded Paul George to Sacramento. I forget what deal that was. But
Paul George essentially was traded to Oklahoma City for Victor Oladipo and Sabonis.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Sabonis
was then traded as part of the Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah, Sabonis for Halliburton. you know, the heads up deal, which a lot of people kind of scratch their heads at over a period of time. That is a deal where I think you could make a case that it benefited both teams. Certainly Sacramento had a logjam in the backcourt. Certainly they got rid of the wrong guy. I don't think anybody would deny that or might have denied that at the time. But Sabonis has broken out for Sacramento in a way that he didn't break out in Indiana, even though he was a very good player. He really has sort of become like a poor man's Jokic out there in Sacramento, which is something that not necessarily too many people saw coming. So it's a thing where it's a very, very, very weird thing for Paul George and his legacy. But the centerpiece of both NBA Finals teams came via trades. Again, indirectly in the case of Halliburton in Indiana because it required another trade, but very interesting still.
Yeah, and it's good. I mean, another legacy that we're definitely going to have to talk about at some point is going to be the legacy of Pascal Siakam, is if Indiana pulls off this upset, he wins another Finals MVP.
Yeah, you know, two-time.
He's another guy that you have to maybe put on the list. And again, on the flip side, Oklahoma City, where you have to talk about this, is that if they win this title, they are very much set on at least getting to a scenario where they can at least get back to the finals in the next 3 to 5 years, at least once.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never want to say, like, I, in a perfect world, I think a lot of Thunder fans would love me to say more. But again, we just know with today's NBA, there's just so much parity. But with how their team makeup is built right now, they're very young. They're only going to get better. And it seems like, at least financially, at least for now. And again, we'll see what happens when a lot of those sort of bills come to roost at some point. But they have all the assets and they have a very good GM. So I feel like even if they have to make those tough decisions down the line, they have all the assets, including the picks and everything else at the end of the day. So at the end of, so because of that, I feel like they're set up for the future as good as anything. And it almost feels like Presti, because he was part of the first big three in Oklahoma City, I think he learned one major factor is that depth is this timeline in the NBA. And he focused more on acquiring someone who could become a future star in SGA, but he also focused on getting all this asset allocation.
Yes. Although I've always said very cynically that you can trade for all the picks that you want to trade for, but you're going to live or die on the picks that you make on how badly you suck when you're tanking. And that's what happened with Oklahoma City. They went in the crapper for a couple of years, and by and large, most of the impact has come from those picks because, by definition, when you're trading away your players to contenders, hey, guess what? The contenders' picks may not be too great. You might be picking 25th in the first round. Now, if you get lucky, that contender in a couple of years, by the time that pick comes due, maybe they're in the crapper. And you end up getting a good pick out of it. But that's one of those things where, again, people have been saying for years, like, Oklahoma City has 672 picks in the next decade. And I've always said, yeah, but how many of them are really going to be worth much of anything? And that's where, I mean, you can say if you have volume, then out of that volume, yes, some of those are statistically likely to be picks where you can really make an impact. And I will say, too, somebody like Jalen Williams, he was, what, the 11th pick in the draft a couple of years ago?
I think they're 11th or 12th. He was someone that fell, but he was kind of a big question mark at the time after playing at, I believe it was Santa Clara at the time. He was a big question mark, but then looking back, I think a lot of us, including me, was like, he got underdrafted. He was one of those guys that there were a handful of teams, Cleveland, who probably should have taken him.
Yes. But,
you know, there were opportunities, you know. And again, too, it's like, and then also we have to know for OKC, did they get a little lucky, too? The year that they got Holmgren, they were not seeded initially to get a top three pick. So they were able to get a guy who could be built around them again, too. The one thing you also have to give credit for OKC is that at this time, too, is that just the culture that they built in the last 5 years of this young team and having them go through like that mini rough patch and then able to secure arena funding to through and then building essentially the future Thunder world somewhere out there in the heartland. It's going to be very interesting to see how this team continues to grow as a franchise just in general, because the history right now of the team since the relocation from Seattle has still very been seeped in that big three that never got back. And now this is an opportunity for them to sort of build their legacy as this is Oklahoma's team. Because these are all guys that we essentially got and drafted ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the way that they have, it's been the long shadow of coming back from the dismantling. Basically, it's taken this long for the franchise to recover from 2012 when at the height of their powers, coming off of a Western Conference championship, they deal away James Harden, which it just in retrospect, such a bad. I mean, I didn't like it at the time, but I had no idea James Harden was going to become the player that he became. I would have really loathed it at the time for them. When you talk about some of the players involved in the series, Siakam, yes, I mean, does this potentially catapult him to Hall of Fame status? If he can take another, you know, Finals MVP here, you know, it's very possible. I mean, he will have been. You know, the second best player on two different championship teams. That's a pretty strong indicator right there. And I think some of the other players, when you talk about somebody that the Cavs passed on here as well, you look at the setup of Indiana's roster and everyone that they had. I don't know if you've ever said this on air. You've said this to me off air. So source on this is trust me, bro. But Ben was saying at the time, the guy that he liked for the Cavs in the draft when they took Isaac Okoro, I believe in 2020, was Aaron Nesmith here, who has really grown into being a solid defensive and now offensive part of what Indiana's doing, along with Andrew Nembhard helping to anchor that defense. So you called it on him, and it took a while for him to really kind of vindicate you, but he did in the long run.
Yeah, and I mean, again, too, is that and I'm not going to toot my own horn on this one, but it's pretty obvious that he was going to work out at some point. But one of the things that does loom over this finals work is his health due to that ankle injury he suffered in game four of the Knicks series. So if, again, like this, we're in this time where, and I was discussing this with another friend yesterday, one of the big things that we have to talk about is health. And if he is not 100%, despite he looked fine in game six of the Knicks series, so I think he's okay. But that is a lingering injury in ankle. So it's possible you can re-aggravate it. It's possible some other things can occur. So I would – it's going to be very interesting. And also, too, one of the big questions that Indiana is going to have to face over a period of time is that they have – and, again, it's the same thing with OKC team. These are two teams right now not paying into the luxury tax. But at some point, as we know, that bill's going to come due to the supermaxes at some point. And it's going to be very interesting to see for OKC, are they going to pay into the luxury tax despite not doing it previously? Is Indiana, like, this team is affordable. Both of these teams are affordable right now for their franchises. Mm-hmm. But down the line, supermaxes are going to come up. And there's going to be discussions being like, should we pay, you know, Chet Holmgren? Should we pay Jalen Williams? Should we pay Tyrese Halliburton? So those are going to all just be big questions that these teams are going to have to face coming up. And that's going to not necessarily impact this finals, but it's going to determine if these two teams are going to have longevity in the long term as well.
Well, on the whole thing of should the Pacers pay Tyrese Halliburton, I mean, I think the only dissenting voice in the universe on that one based on his track record might be Nico Harrison. But as far as it goes with
– I mean, the question I have too, Rick, is that if this ends up being his best season, he's going to – at some point there's going to be an extension for a fair amount of money. And the question is going to be is that is this like his best season?
Well, I think you have to open the Brinks truck. Sure. You got to open the Brinks truck to him. I mean, he's undeniably at this point a top 10 player in the league.
Oh, yeah. That's not a question. But the discussion, and I think we all know, too, is how much is that max going to be? And that's going to impact the rest of the roster construction as well.
It is. It absolutely is. They're going to face an even nearer term decision on Miles Turner, and that's going to be very interesting to see where that goes. And, Oklahoma City is going to have payroll decisions to be made. And again, we're going to see how much they learned from the disaster of 2012 and what became the slow dismantling of that that core, a core that should have yielded more than one championship and only yielded one NBA Finals appearance over that period of time. We'll see, because financially at the time, that was part of why they avoided all of that versus now. Have they absorbed the lesson? And again, Dan Gilbert showed it in Cleveland that, again, you got to spend money to make money. I mean, those Cavs teams that kept making the finals, won the championship the 1 year, Dan Gilbert was paying out the yin-yang for those teams. And I guarantee you the guy wasn't taking a bath for it. It was paying off. That's the way that these things work. Oklahoma City, they're going to get it back in terms of, again, they're on the verge of becoming a substantial brand in the NBA going forward. They're set up. And again, famous last words, because I was saying 2 years ago, Denver will not only win this title, but they will win a couple thereafter. And we started to see, I think because of the way that they manage the cap implications, I think that kind of hastened their downfall, as well as you could say some of the internal turmoil, front office slash coaching. But Oklahoma City is even younger. They've got a longer runway. I mean, the only team that's got as long of a runway that I can see that's relatively unimpeded is the Cavs, quite frankly. They're very similar in that way as far as being young teams set up for the duration. So I think they're not going to be facing any kind of they're going to face pressures, but they're going to be manageable ones. And again, if they continue drafting and developing as they have, they're going to have to let some of the ancillary pieces in the rotation go eventually. But these are the guys that they've been able to replace. I'm not going to necessarily say easily, but they've been able to plug them into that system and be able to get the best out of them. So with all the available draft capital that they have, I think that's where it probably comes into play the most, is maintaining the depth on the roster and the ability, if need be, to package a bunch of picks and move up and get somebody that can be a substantial sixth man player or somebody like that. And I think Indiana, again, they're in a little bit of a similar situation. I think their cap implications are not as rosy going forward. And of course, people have been talking about for a while that Siakam being on kind of an older timeline than kind of the rest of the team here. But Indiana's, you know, set up pretty well to keep coming back next year and the year after potentially as well. But Oklahoma City, yeah, I mean, when you look at it, they just really look like a machine at this point in time. They have the ability to kind of go deep. And that's what's good. There are just so many interesting X's and O's aspects of this finals, and the ones that, as you and I said before, may or may not and probably won't affect the ratings, because the ratings don't live or die based on the X's and O's. They are based on the Q rating, essentially. But in terms of the X's and O's of this, Indiana's ability to consistently walk the tightrope. They've done it for 2+ years now of playing very fast, but managing the turnovers, keeping the turnovers manageable. Can they continue to do that against Oklahoma City? Oklahoma City likes to play a pretty fast pace as well. They do so as well in a manageable style. I did see, as I was surfing around, looking at some different aspects of predictions online, it was noted on the Ringer website, the notion of potentially Indiana, and certainly this would be their goal, but I have a hard time seeing it happen, trying to force Hartenstein and Holmgren off the floor for stretches with the pace. And I'm, or at the very least, Hartenstein, and forcing them to play a little bit smaller. I don't see that happening, but that is something where, I mean, if Indiana can do that and can kind of dictate that matchup, that's one of that's on a short list of the things that would give them the best chance to win the series.
Right. And on top of it, we've seen in Oklahoma City's losses during the postseason, especially to Denver, is that the way to beat OKC is to control the pace and control the tempo. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're getting good shots, and as long as you're forcing SGA and the rest of the team take tougher shots, you have an opportunity to win. And again, it's very simple for Indiana. If they play their pace and they limit their turnovers against one of the best teams in NBA history to cause turnovers, they're going to have a legitimate shot to win the series.
They're going to, yes, if it plays out that way. So there's a fair amount of things that need to go Indiana's way for this to become a series that they can actually win. And as we said before, that, yeah, I mean, if Oklahoma City can assert themselves in the first two games, take that 2-0 lead, but not only do that, do so convincingly, maybe even mix in a blowout or so, then we are headed for, yeah, what could be a historically low ratings number for this series, because that's in particular where market size comes into play. as far as it lines up for this series, for our thoughts on outcome for it, as I look at this here, if I'm just going by what I see on paper, I would probably concur with, I think the Ringer's pick was Oklahoma City in five. I'm going to say six. I think that Indiana can stretch at the six, and I think it's the ability to win the close games. They've shown that a bunch of times during the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be able to execute any kind of grand comeback as they have done memorably in a number of series thus far. I don't see them coming back from double digits relatively later in a game to be able to take a win from Oklahoma City. But if they hang around, I think they probably have a better than 50-50 chance of getting their arm raised at the end of the night. I'm going to say Oklahoma City in six. You, Ben, have the 10-0 streak riding right now. And this is one of these things where if I'm to put myself back around turn of the century or so, had I had such a streak and picking Super Bowls, it would have been tough for me to go with the Ravens to win the Super Bowl and beat the Giants for the very reason with you here. Again, Sonics, your team from back in the day, essentially to you, Oklahoma City equals what the Baltimore Ravens are to me. So if you can put that aside here, your thoughts on how this goes and your chance to get to 11-0 with this pick.
I think it's going to be a very interesting series. It's going to go, in my opinion, one of two ways. It's either going to be Oklahoma City in a relatively quick sweep, or this is going to be a very long series. Goes to seven. But so I've been looking at all the numbers. I've been looking at all the things. And, you know, this would be the time that I would love to go out on a limb. And maybe I will. Let's do it. Why not? We're going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say Oklahoma City in seven.
In seven. Okay, but you're still picking them. Okay.
I think this is... this is one of those scenarios where it's going to be the NBA Finals that ratings-wise is going to be terrible, but it's going to be one of those you needed to watch all those games at some point.
Yeah.
Wherever all the media is like, don't pay attention to this finals, this is the finals you might want to pay attention to.
Well, and again, and we'll see, because this marks, as we saw at the end of the Eastern Conference Finals here, the end of the era of the games on the Turner networks here, TNT. As we move into the era now, once again, with NBC, this time / Peacock, and Amazon Prime next year, that, again, NBC probably did the best job of any network, I would say, in NBA history, of probably being able to market the game, the stars. I mean, maybe CBS in the 80s. I mean, they had a decent amount to do with the boom that the game had in the 80s. But what NBC did in the 90s into the early part of the millennium here, it just, again, they're coming in at a point in time where, again, they may be able to take a team like Oklahoma City. And again, if they are the champions, and if they are the champions in relatively dominant fashion, that will do a lot to kind of establish themselves and make America sit up and take notice that even though they're a small market team, they're somebody you need to pay attention to. But seeing the marketing might of NBC behind them coming into next year and seeing what they're going to be able to do in conjunction with the other TV partners will be interesting. You had me a little bit alarmed there when you were talking about going out on a limb, because I thought it was just like, if Ben's not going to be able to pick it, Oklahoma City, whatever. If you're picking them to go to seven, okay. All right. That's fine. I didn't want to see you flush 10-0 on this big of a launch.
As much as I would love to go out on a limb. I thought about it. It's a legitimate scenario because this is one of those weird teams that's gone hot at the right time, and it then feels like, how do you put it, team of destiny scenario.
Yeah,
but it just feels like logically Oklahoma City's been one of the most dominant teams. And we've seen in recent memory outside of Cleveland's upset of Golden State that the team statistically during the regular season that is the best usually wins the finals. It's very, very rare where it doesn't happen. I think honestly, even outside of Golden State in that one in the year that Dallas lost to the Elite Warriors, like those are the only two teams that I think had over 62 wins that did not at least get to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of years where
with the best record in the league.
That was the most impressive pick you made in the last 10 years You really went out on a big limb there, but you had said at the time, just in looking at the analytics, there was something that told you that Toronto had a chance against Golden State. And again, may I remind everybody that there were no injuries or significant ones anyways, not the season-ending injuries that happened to Durant and Thompson. Those happened in the finals. It became a fait accompli, basically, but Toronto was already up in the finals. So it was one of those things that just all that did was preclude a Golden State comeback. You and I both went out on a limb in 2016. There was just something we saw with the Cavs team. You and I were right with all four of the Cavs' Golden State picks. All 4 years, you and I had our fingers on the pulse on that one. I think 2016, you and I did a very good job of diagnosing that one coming in because Golden State having the 73 wins, it would have been just easy to go chalk on that one there. But it, just everything the way that the Cavs were configured, it looked like it was their year, and it was. We differed in 2021. I feel like that was another pretty impressive pick on your part. I had the Suns over Milwaukee, and I really thought it was going to be one of these Chris Paul destiny kind of things. I thought that the Suns were going to be able to get it done. You called it there with Milwaukee. The other time we differed was last year where, again, I went out on a big limb, and it was just I went with the whole precept of usually the best player in the series. I mean, not always. But the best player in the series will come out on top. And there will be people that would say, but Rick, Tatum was actually the best player in the series. I don't believe Tatum, again, at full strength, which he is not now. He's got to come back from his injury deal in another year or so. I don't believe that the Tatum is better than Luka, notwithstanding what happened in last year's series. If you're going to go by that precept this year, just about everybody in the league right now probably puts SGA 1 or 2, depending on him and Jokic, because that was kind of the argument for MVP. Halliburton, the top 10 player, has a chance to, I think, force his way into the top 5 if he can help pull off the big upset here. And the other thing is as well that one of these sort of every 25-year kind of deals, because the Lakers started their most recent dynasty run in 2000 against, you guessed it, Indiana. So as I tweeted out the other night, quasi-jokingly here, because Oklahoma City Thunder, of course, didn't exist in 2000. It'll be some team that doesn't exist right now. Let's say it's the Mexico City Mexicans against Indiana in 2050 in the NBA Finals. Hate to tell you, Indianapolis, but that's the next time your team will be back. History doesn't lie.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, though, I predicted the Mexico City would be the Capitans, so, you know.
Okay, already, Capitans. All right.
Yeah, we're already going that route at some point. After we get Seattle, LA, Las Vegas expansion, we're getting Vancouver, Mexico City expansion at some point in our lifetime. So
yes, and so
it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be an enjoyable timeline. So folks, and again, one thing I do want to also note too, Rick, is that I also feel like the league, with the transition of the media rights, it's probably going to be better for the league on a whole, because I do believe that both NBC and Amazon are going to probably take a more balanced approach to the NBA than in comparison to what ESPN and TNT, who do a great job on their own rights, but they are very heavy focused on certain teams. And I feel like it's better for the league when you have media partners who's willing to look at the wider scope of the league instead of just, we need to promote these players over everyone, no matter what.
Yeah, and in the case of NBC, where, as I understand it, they may be doing a little bit next year in terms of regional matchups. So you're going to kind of need to broaden the basis if you're going to do that. If you're going to have two games in prime time, then you're going to need to have America invested in more teams than just who's LeBron playing for now, that kind of thing. So NBC with their business model, I hadn't thought of it exactly until you said that, but yeah. That's the way that that is going to play out, I think, significantly next year. And that's where NBC coming in, I think, with this. We've been talking about this for years, a greater sort of parity at the top. This is now going to be the second longest run, I think, in NBA history of having a new champion every year throughout the remainder of the postseason. I think 7 years in a row now with a new champion on top. So We'll have to see how all of that plays out here, and if Oklahoma City has a chance to potentially break that next year, which I think they might. But in looking at this year's 2025 NBA Finals, any other thoughts we didn't get to, Ben?
I mean, one thing, and I think this is going to be the really interesting part of the finals that we haven't really talked about yet, is if we see in Oklahoma City initially, and we've talked about like the ratings in terms of the decrease or the increase, it's going to be very telling about how important the league is in the microcosm of the sports fan's mind if we see a significant drop-off from the first couple of games onward. Because I think one of the questions we're going to ask is that we're going to see, especially with the new media rights, a lot of playoff games are now going to be pushed around to NBC and Peacock and Amazon Prime. So it's going to be really interesting to see, even though like ESPN and ABC and Disney has locked up the finals forever, it's going to be very interesting to see how important these finals ratings will soon be. Because again, we all talk about ratings as like, well, they don't really matter, but for the Q score of the league, it does matter. So it's going to be really interesting to see like how these finals are treated, because it's really the first time we've had such a regional matchup.
That's true.
Like, we have one against Phoenix and Milwaukee, but it almost felt like both of those teams have like long NBA legacies essentially. And again, like the Pacers and OKC have legacies as well, but I don't feel it's the branding is just not, you know, it's more new than old, I would say.
Yeah, and also, I mean, Greek Freak, Chris Paul, that's more of a hook than to the mainstream than what we've got going on here. So, yeah, I mean, this is really sort of pushing the envelope in that direction. You and I were really kind of joking about how despondent the NBA would be if it was a Minnesota-Indiana NBA Finals. But Oklahoma City saved the league from that at the very least. And we'll see how it goes. If this is the crowning of a Thunder team that could go on to win more than one title and should on paper go on to win more than one title based on what they have in the years ahead. As always, Ben Chu, a great pleasure getting to break this down with you. FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu, thank you so much, my man. And thank you everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1836.